You're listening to The Back 40, the podcast for Ontario farmers, covering topics and issues that matter most to Ontario agriculture. Brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm the host of The Back 40, Mike Brine, agribusiness specialist at Trillium Mutual Insurance. Been a lot of talk about sustainability in the world as far as the environment goes, and particularly in food production. And in recent years, the beef industry has come under fire in a lot of cases because of the greenhouse gases that people think that there's too much emissions because of that. It's not that simple. There's differences between different areas in the world as to how much greenhouse gas the beef industry does produce. The industry in Canada has made tremendous strides in the last 30 years. Today, we're talking with Ann Wasko. Ann is a rancher. She is a market analyst for the beef industry. She is also the chair of the Canadian Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. Ann, welcome to the Back 40.
Well, great to be here with you today, Mike.
What is the Canadian Roundtable for Sustainable Beef, and how did you get involved with them?
The Canadian Roundtable for Sustainable Beef is a multi-stakeholder, not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to advance beef sustainability in Canada. We do that through multi-stakeholder engagement, collaboration, communication, and science. Basically, what we're doing is we're bringing organizations together from across the entire beef value chain and beyond to work on areas of common interest in the area of sustainability. So our membership consists of folks like myself, producer organizations, processors, retail food service, NGOs, food and business, academic institutes, and others. And I'd say it's a mixed group. And sometimes at our board table, the discussions can be difficult or entertaining, to say the least. I think we found it's a good way for us as an industry to have those conversations, those difficult conversations at the board table versus having the discussion maybe out in the media or somewhere else. That's really one of the successes, I think, of the roundtable is the collaboration and sharing of information. And sometimes it's simple just learning about something in another sector in your industry. So that's what the roundtable is. I'm just ending my third year as chair with one more to go here. Myself personally got involved. I was back in 2015. I was sitting at a board table with some folks, and one of them was a senior executive from McDonald's, and we got visiting about they were looking to start this pilot project for certified sustainable beef, or wanting to prove that they could track sustainable beef from the ranch clear through to the burger, if you will. And they were having trouble getting ranchers involved at the pilot project level. So I came home to the ranch here and my husband, Barry, and I kind of said, hey, I've got a friend, they need our help. And so in we jumped with both feet in the pilot project. We've never looked back. So that's how it all started, kind of helping a friend out. And of course, as a market analyst, Mike, I know that McDonald's was one of the biggest buyers of beef in Canada. So my argument when I came home to talk to my husband was, they buy a lot of beef. You know, we got to listen to what they're asking. You know, they want some help. We need to help our biggest customer. So that's how it started.
So not just a market analyst, you're also a rancher. Tell us a little bit about the operation that you and your husband run.
We are in the deep southwest corner of Saskatchewan, just south of the town called East End. The ranch is certainly in an area, this is a semi-arid part of Canada, of Saskatchewan. A lot of our ranch is on the native prairie grassland that you hear lots of talk about. I moved out here in 2010 when I met Barry. And he's ranched here all his life, third generation rancher. Our cow herd typically grazes grass or swath grazes 9 months of the year. So, we have a pretty extensive grazing season to move the cows through. And then we bring them closer to home for that winter feeding period of January to March, where we'll take hay or green feed out to them. And then by April 1st, they're into their calving fields and starting the whole cycle again. So that's kind of the rotation. Normally, we'd keep our calves, our weaned calves, in the fall over the winter to background. But of course, as you've well heard about the drought here in Western Canada, well, even into Western Ontario, the situation's a little different. We're really struggling to put together enough feed for the cow herd this winter. And so we've had to make the decision that the calves are going to have to go down the road, as they say, and we'll sell them into a feedlot. Whereas normally we would have done that till next year. And also we're looking at probably putting our replacement heifers somewhere else to get custom fed. So again, normally we produce enough feed here for all that to happen, but this year's drought just didn't allow us to get that done. And to be able to go out and find feed today is proving pretty difficult.
The drought in Western Canada, I think we've all heard lots about that. You're going to be fortunate. You're going to be able to maintain the cow herd that you've got, but not all of your neighbors and not all the people in Western Canada are going to be that fortunate, unfortunately.
Exactly. Yeah.
When you started working with the Roundtable, how do you go about improving the sustainability of beef, particularly from the perspective of greenhouse gases?
I think it's, first of all, important to understand and recognize that farmers and ranchers have been producing beef responsibly and sustainably for generations. We've continually improved our practices, whether it's been genetics, animal nutrition, animal health, feed efficiency, all of those things. We've seen some huge gains across the industry over the last number of years. Science and innovation really have reduced the overall environmental footprint of Canadian beef. And so there's been research done over a 30-year period. Each unit of Canadian beef today uses 17% less water, 29% fewer breeding cattle, 24% less land, and produced 15% less greenhouse gases. So in a nutshell, Mike, the industry has been producing more with less without even being told to do so, right? I mean, it simply made sense. Producers always moving the needle and looking for better ways to do things better. And so this evolution has been certainly going on, but we also know we have to keep doing more. And the grain industry, in terms of things like no-till and the various ways to reduce synthetic fertilizer use, cover crops, you know, all those various things that we continue to learn more about, especially on the cattle side, more of the adaptive type grazing management systems you're starting to see in some areas really, really take hold as well. I think we're always seeing the needle move, but now we're really needing to measure and talk exactly about what that means and how we're moving the needle.
Yeah, and the measurement is something that's very interesting. When I was working in the feed industry, we used to talk about if you can't measure it, you can't improve it. That's a lot of where this has to start, isn't it? Like, yeah. It's really good to say, well, we're doing a good job and we are being responsible. But if you don't measure it, nobody else is going to be able to have that hard data. They're just going to have to take your word for it.
And that's exactly, you know, one of the first areas of work that CRSB, the Canadian Roundtable for Sustainable Beef, had to start with was with this benchmarking work. And so the first national beef sustainability assessment was done in 2016. And that's that work that gives us these various figures like 2.4% of greenhouse gases. So Canada's beef industry accounts for 2.4% of Canada's total greenhouse gases and various other numbers. And again, going back to that 2.4%, it's one of the lowest in the world. But often media will go out and use global reports on beef production from, and lots of countries around the world do not produce beef like we do here in Canada or in North America. We couldn't talk about it until we had those numbers and then also be able to talk about where we want to go or where we can go. We also did commit to updating that work, that benchmark work that we did in 2016, so that we can say, you know, what's moving, what's not, where are the gaps? So we have already started the process. 2023, obviously, we have to have it complete. This is what is really allowing us to measure, collaborate, improve. And we are going to be asking producers to fill out a survey because that's where it kind of starts. So we will be looking to kind of start to work on this next step of the update to this benchmark work that started back in 2016. So it needs to be done. You can't go forward without, like you say, measuring what's happened in the past too.
So you came up with some numbers on the improvements that we've seen. I assume that some of those numbers came from this initial survey that you did in 2016?
Exactly. So that was kind of that measure at that point in time. But then a lot of the other data that has been various research that's been done over the years that gave us that 30-year from 1981 to 2011 was some of those earlier numbers that I gave you. But again, the benchmark work from 2016 is what gave us that greenhouse gas number that the industry continues to take some negative light over. But at the same time, we're showing that we can make some improvements specifically to that area of greenhouse gases in terms of Canada.
Now, the area that you're in Saskatchewan, you were described that as semi-arid. It's extremely dry. And that land really isn't suitable for growing things like wheat or canola, is it?
There's various levels of quality of soil. And so there's durum wheat, a lot of the pulse crops, like some drier areas like peas and lentils. So we do see those crops here. But on the native prairie where we graze a lot of our cow herds, certainly that has never been tilled. And would be certainly very detrimental if it was. I mean, we talk about preserving the ecosystems, especially endangered ecosystems like the temperate grassland that where I live, for example. I think, you know, raising beef cattle happens already in areas that make sense, mm-hmm. whether it be, you know, all across Canada. And at the same time, there's areas in Saskatchewan that have exceptionally good soils that make a lot of sense to grow wheat and canola and other crops on. But
yeah, absolutely. We talked to Amy Peck a few episodes back about the necessity of having that primary grazer on some of this land. And a lot of that is the areas that don't get a lot of rain. They do sequester a lot of carbon in that area as well.
Exactly. Just as a reminder, there's only 35 million acres of these temperate native grasslands left in Canada. It is an endangered ecosystem. There's only 26% of it left from what we would have started back with. And as you've heard before, to survive and thrive, these grasslands really do need that grazing herbivore, if you will. It used to be the bison, right?
Yep.
So when people suggest that we can get rid of cows or, you know, stop eating beef, well, first of all, that land would get converted into something else. So the land, this prairie, the grassland that I look at would be likely turned into cropland, or if you're closer to an urban center, it would be pavement. These grasslands in Canada store 1.5 billion tons of carbon in the soil. It's huge. And I think getting our heads wrapped around that, if we were to, say, cultivate or develop these lands that we're talking about, these native prairie lands, 50% of the stored carbon gets released. Let's even just ratchet it back and say you're going to reduce the beef herd by 25% and lose 25% of these lands. That's 190 million tons of carbon being emitted on an annual basis. That's a third of Canada's total emissions. So, I mean, it's huge. I think a quote I saw from a recent study of Nature United suggested, this is their quote, avoiding grassland version and the resulting preservation of soil carbon stocks represented the single largest opportunity in Canada for natural climate solutions. And so I really would like to see more focus, you know, really put on preserving these grasslands that if they're lost, we don't get them back, and we certainly don't get that carbon back in the soil.
No, not without a lot of work. That's been stored over a lot of years. And to suggest that if we release it, it's going to come back again anytime quickly, it's just not reasonable. Do you like what you're hearing from the Back 40? We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments and thoughts to theback40@trilliummutual.com. Or follow us on social media at Trillium Mutual. So if the answer is not to shut down the beef industry, because there would be ramifications from a carbon standpoint, what are we doing to improve the amount of emissions that we see out of the beef industry?
First of all, I think it's really important when you look at a food system sustainability, looking at it more than just one number, right? One single metric. So I think, you know, we have to be careful, first of all, getting hung up on just looking at greenhouse gases alone, because the ecosystem services that we've talked about in terms of these prairies, having cattle on that land, it's a big complex cycle, if you will. So producers have historically adopted and invested in practices that make sense or that are economical and provide value. And ongoing production efficiencies are going to be quickly adopted when they make sense. As science and technology improve and we learn more, whether it's about genetics, genomics, feed efficiencies, feed additives, you know, we're hearing research about adding seaweed to feed that reduces, you know, emissions and things like that. There's a pile of work being done. And as it's done and when it becomes commercially acceptable and viable, I don't think you have to ask producers twice to jump on that bandwagon. They're there.
A lot of this, the reduction in greenhouse gas, the same things that make you more economically sustainable make you more environmentally sustainable too. If you get more production out of that land from less cows, or less cattle, or less feed, you get less emissions and you're more profitable as well.
That's where our gains have been to date, and that's where I continue to see gains going forward. I think the beef industry has set some pretty ambitious goals, just looking forward, if you will. we know we can be part of the climate change solution. So that's really been our focus. We saw the beef industry, and this isn't just CRSB. We were part of it, along with lots of the other groups across Canada, the seven national beef organizations, from processors to producers and all the rest of it. But they're called the Canadian Beef Advisors. But they set some pretty ambitious goals here earlier this late last year and earlier this year to show that the industry wants to meet these long-term goals and are committed to doing that. So a couple of them, if you bear with me, Mike, a couple of the ones that pertain to our discussion today are around the greenhouse gas and carbon sequestration goal, and then also the land use and biodiversity goal. So one of the points under the greenhouse gas goal is to reduce primary production emission in our industry by 33% by 2030. So an ambitious goal, but we think through the various measures that I've been talking about, we can move the needle. One of the other goals is to safeguard that 1.5 billion tons of carbon we've already got in the soil. Let's make sure we keep it there and sequester another 3.4 million tons of carbon each year. And things like grazing management, cover crops, things like that, as we start to really focus on soil health and improving soils, can move us down the path towards sequestering more carbon in the soil. So, and the other one we've got under land use, and this is going to be a hard one because I live down here and I see what goes on with these native grasslands, but we want to maintain the 35 million acres that we've got. Let's put the stake in the ground and no, we can't lose any more of these grasslands. They're too important.
And a lot of that comes back to the economics too. I mean, if it's not economical for beef production, then these lands will get broken up and they will get used for something else, probably, as you say, probably crop production. And all of the gains that you're looking at in the beef industry at that point go out the window if you start losing that carbon out of the soil.
Exactly. So whether it's government policies, markets start to see the value of that carbon there and sequestering more carbon, like you say, putting value where it belongs in terms of keeping that carbon there, understanding just how important it is and making sure it stays there from an economic perspective, whether that's directly or indirectly, there's got to be some movement in terms of these programs and these ecosystem services that are out there, getting dollars into pockets.
Mm-hmm. The topics particularly of interest this year where without feed because of drought, we do stand a very real risk of losing a fair number of beef cows out of that system there, and it'll be difficult to replace those again.
It is. I mean, we've seen the beef cow herd in Canada has been in a decline since after BSE. That's been a concern of ours in the industry for some time. How do you keep all this infrastructure, transportation, packing plants, consumers? Consumers are telling us they want to buy Canadian beef, but there's a long link between there and, of course, the rancher, the cow-calf producers been struggling in terms of economics, whether it's drought or whether it's been country of origin labeling or whether it's been BSE. There's a long list of challenges and stumbles. And even though we're talking about a drought here this year, Mike, I mean, we've been pretty dry for the last 3 years. So that's why we had no subsoil moisture coming into 2021. We were dry last year. So there's always challenges, I guess that's the point. The industry has really been challenged.
That's often the problem that you run into with drought. It's not that it's dry this year. It's that there's no moisture in the soil to fall back on because we've had several dry years. This is just the culmination of, as you say, several dry years of weather.
Exactly.
So when you talk about the improvements, and those are lofty goals, the 33% improvement there, where's that improvement going to come from? Is that going to be new technology, new feeding technology? Is that going to be genetics? Is it going to be a combination of everything? Or where do you think those improvements are going to come from?
Well, when we did the work to come up with those goals, obviously we had researchers looking into, you know, what's feasible, what's possible, where have the big gains been so far, and where can we really move the needle? And, you know, I think there's a variety of areas, like you say, but it was pointed out in this research to us that most of the movement in terms of potential gains in GHG emissions is going to come from, like you said, feed efficiency, feed grain yields, get bigger yields out of our crops, improving our soil organic carbon. And then the other piece we haven't talked about yet today, Mike, is food waste. As a producer, you know, what can I do about food waste from where I sit today? But at the Canadian Roundtable for Sustainable Beef, remember I said we've got all the different stakeholders around the table, including retail, food service, processors. They wanted to make sure that they were part of this goal setting process as well. And so they certainly wanted to be part of that. And so a goal was also set under food waste to reduce food waste from secondary processing to consumer by 50% by 2030. So that's a big goal.
That's big.
Yeah, it is a big goal. But again, what's the downside for any of us in anywhere through the entire production change in terms of reducing food waste? At a cattle producer's level, certainly, I suspect Amy might have talked about this when you guys visited a few weeks ago, but in terms of what cattle can consume, in terms of food that humans don't want, whether it's, you know, the ugly fruit or the ugly vegetables or things that have been turned down in terms of human consumption, cattle will eat them. So there's certainly ways there to help reduce food waste, even in terms of what cattle can consume that humans don't want to. Those are the four areas that really were pointed out to us as here's where we can move the needle big time in terms of, well, and especially of hitting that goal that we've got, that 33% reduction by 2030. Those are where the gains are going to come from, I suspect.
And it still all has to be economical when we get done with it. And I've talked about this before. Everybody would like to see sustainable beef. Everybody would like to see animals treated humanely and all that. When you get to the store, though, people look and they say, okay, well, this cut of beef was raised sustainably and it's 20% more. And they walk over to the stuff that isn't. And that's imports that are not raised as efficiently as what we see in Canada. Yeah. That's a reality. That's what people do. But it still makes it more difficult for you to meet those goals if you don't do it economically.
Yeah, that's right, Mike. But I would say that most of our gains so far have also helped reduce costs. But yeah, something can't come to the table that's going to cost us more to get the job done is just not going to be adopted. You know, I'm pretty excited about technologies. I'm far from an expert on technology, but I understand that there's, you know, lots of stuff coming down the pipeline in terms of, you know, whether it's to do with transparency or information flow or just all of the technologies that are moving so quickly that I think all of a sudden we're going to see some pretty interesting stuff out there that I think is going to get picked up. So I'm hopeful.
So they're going to ask you to gaze into your crystal ball a little bit with all the technologies and all the changes that are going to need to come in order to meet those goals. What do you think cattle ranching and cattle farming is going to look like in 10 years down the road?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think, you know, we hear a lot about smart farming and, you know, precision farming and some of the things that are going on crop side. And I do sense and see more of that making its way into the calf side or certainly into the finishing side. But, you know, precision ranching, smart ranching, I think with all the different, you know, points and variables that can get us there, I do see lots of change coming from that perspective. But at the end of the day, we've got soils that we need to keep healthy. We've got water, we've got air, you know, all of the environmental pieces that have been such a focus for producers. The limelight's been thrown on us. And so I think we've got a very good story to tell. I think we need to do a better job of telling it and sharing those stories. But I do think these ambitious goals that the industry set can be met, and we're committed to doing that. But at the same time, I think we have to be pretty vocal instead of, you know, kind of sitting in the background and just assuming that beef is going to be the food of choice. I think we have to get a lot more proactive in terms of our story and the narrative.
I think that's a storyline that we hear all throughout Canadian agriculture, is that difficulty of getting that message out to consumers and to people in urban centers, just what actually does go on the farm, and that people are responsible when they raise crops and livestock, because it makes economic sense as well.
Yeah. But, you know, again, we can't rest on our laurels. You know, we've got a good story to tell. We're going to move the bar. But again, it's getting out of our comfort zone a little bit to talk about how proud we are of what we produce. And I think we just simply have to get more comfortable with that. We know that we can be a part of the solution in terms of climate change. And I think that's the storyline that I think we need to work on, really making sure our consuming public knows that we're serious about helping move the bar.
Does government have a role in improving this? How can they support our beef industry?
Well, certainly from a variety of directions, I suspect, but certainly in terms of the environment and policy direction that the government chooses. So we have met CRSB has met this summer with some of the MPs from the previous Environment Committee to talk about beef and cattle and the grasslands and all these things we've talked about today. So to help ensure that, you know, policies going forward aren't detrimental to what we do out here, but at the same time, can help move the mark in trying to hit some of these goals we want to hit and keep these grasslands together. And how do the can they be involved in those ecosystem services that we're talking about? So there's certainly pieces that can be played in terms of how the government and the policies that are set and how we look at beef production, especially in terms of the climate change and the big global picture as well. So it's something we're obviously meeting with the Environment Committee from our perspective, but just even the Agriculture Committee as well, and talking about how we move the ball and be supportive, not put together policies that are going to head us in the wrong direction or that don't make sense for us. So it's a communication piece as well, for sure.
We talked, you've done more than just measure, and you've done a lot towards trying to get that story out. And we talked before we came on the recording here that you've created a website here that is more or less for consumers and people that want to find out more about the beef industry. Tell us a little bit about that website.
Yeah, we ranchers, producers, farmers, agriculture, less than 2% of the Canadian population. And so, you know, that's always the struggle, as you say. So the Canadian Roundtable for Sustainable Beef did go forward and launch a website called beeffortheplanet.ca. And it's got a lot of those tidbits that I've talked about a little bit here today, but really consolidated. And I tell producers too, it's a good place to go and pick up some of those numbers and those facts and even some infographics about things that we've talked about on the environmental side, and get your elevator speech ready or your elevator pitch ready for, you know, that short snippet when you're standing in a lineup, well, 6 meters away now, but visiting with somebody about the beef industry. And lots of times, Mike, it's just folks asking questions, right? You know, we hear today's consumer just wants to know more about their food, where their food's coming from, how it's produced. We can tell that story. There's a great story to tell. So there's some neat little tidbits in that. I think producers and anybody that's listening that's not a producer, obviously, you know, great site to go and pick some information up. And if you're just interested in learning more about the Canadian Roundtable, we've got a great website as well, crsb.ca. So that's a couple of spots to find more information. Sometimes it's hard to get your head around lots of numbers, lots of data. It's something we're not used to talking about. So I really urge producers to go have a look and grab a couple tidbits that, you know, resonate with you and your operation and build that elevator speech.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be all about the statistics and the numbers, because a lot of people that ask questions aren't interested in the numbers. Speaking from experience, many of the questions you get are a lot more simple than you might imagine, because people don't really understand anything that goes on a ranch or on a farm or anything like that. So they're asking really, really basic questions that most of us in the industry are well able to answer there. And they don't want to hear a bunch of statistics, do they?
No. So these are those quick little snippets. You know, we just need to get more comfortable talking about what we do. We got to be proud of it. We've got a great story and just own it.
We've been speaking with Ann Wasko from the Canadian Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. Join us next time when our guests will be Carolyn Webb and Nicole Hambleton from Sustain Ontario. Sustain Ontario is an organization that is devoted to seeing that students have good, healthy food, all the while providing an education as to where that food comes from. That's next time on The Back 40. And I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. It's been great to have you on The Back 40.
It's been great to be here. Thanks, Mike.
You've been listening to The Back 40, brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance. Be sure to subscribe to The Back 40 wherever you find your favorite podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. The Back 40, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm Mike Brine. Until next time, take care and stay safe.